Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Despite the government shutdown, our immigration courts have remained open. The Department of Justice argues they are operating in order to handle the national emergency at the border. Charlotte's immigration court, which serves both North and South Carolina, is among the top 10 busiest in the country, with a backlog of more than 130,000 cases. Shutting down would have increased that number. But the current backlog is also being hurt by the Trump administration, which earlier this year cut immigration judge positions while others resigned. WBUR in Boston reports that in July, out of 700 judges across the country, more than 100 were fired or resigned. To address that, the DOJ swore in dozens of new immigration judges, often on temporary appointments, while also changing the qualifications for those judges. It is no longer deemed necessary for immigration judges to have immigration law experience. Today, a closer look at our immigration court, the backlog, its impact on due process and the rule of law, and more. George Pappas is a former immigration court judge. Jamila Espinosa is an immigration attorney with Espinosa Law. And Julian Berger has been reporting on this for WFAE News as our race and equity reporter. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to you all. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
We also invited someone from the Department of Justice to join us. We received an email from the Executive Office for Immigration Review stating that due to the lapse in appropriations, i.e. the government shutdown, their mailbox was not currently being monitored. So they're not here this morning. So, Julian, I'm starting with you. How long has Charlotte's immigration court backlog have been so large, 130,000 cases? And does it predate the Trump administration and their efforts to hasten deportations?
Yeah, so this backlog has been something that's been before the Trump administration. We saw that in the Biden administration, the backlog was kind of increasing. And last year, it got to about 148,000 cases. So now it's kind of decreased a little bit, but still it's the eighth largest.
And how has it changed in the last 11 months? Is it going up? Is it staying status? Is the growth of the backlog about the same as it has been? How would you describe it?
Yeah, it's decreasing a little bit, but the average wait time is increasing. From what I just looked at the data this morning, the average wait time is now 671 days for any given hearing at Charlotte's Immigration Court. So that's about 2 years that somebody is waiting for their next court date.
Well, Jamila, would there be even more of a backlog were it not for the many deportations that have, or the roundups and attempted deportations being attempted by the Trump administration? I'm asking, has it raised the level, because they seem to want to circumvent the courts altogether?
It absolutely has raised the level. It's also raised the level of detained cases, which is prolonging now those non-detained cases. The detained cases are given priority. So we're seeing non-detained cases, which are a lot of the cases that I have, be continued at the very last minute. Someone who's been waiting for their case to be heard for years, we go to a final hearing, and within minutes of arriving, we're told the day of that the judge cannot hear the case because there's a detained docket that takes priority of it. And that's happened at least 5 times in the last 3 months to me.
I mentioned that these backlogs are not just in Charlotte. They're happening across the country. And George Pappas, you were a judge, an immigration judge, in two cities, ours and also in Boston. Are there similar case backlogs there?
Well, judge in Boston, Chelmsford, Massachusetts, not in Charlotte. So I was not presiding in Charlotte. The backlog's even worse up there. They're up to 20-30 for individual hearings. The detained problem is endemic. They're now importing detained cases into Boston that have nothing to do with Boston. EOIR, the Executive Office of Immigration Review, is just assigning cases from all over the country to the judges in Boston. So, and that takes up their time. Obviously, they can't finish their individual hearings. So the bottleneck exists primarily because of a lack of immigration judges. I mean, you just lost 130, not 100, 130. 70 were fired, terminated under Article 2. The other ones were forced out, or they took the DOGE fork in the road, early retirement. And so the immigration judge staff has been decimated from coast to coast. My court had 18 judges in September of 2024. They have five today, and they're probably going to lose one more.
How do you explain that? It seems to me that if you come into office promising to deport as many people as you possibly can, I think he promised millions of deportations. Is it strictly because they want to do it without going through due process, without providing due process, because they don't believe that these people should have due process?
You're right. President Trump does not believe in due process. He said it on Truth Social. He doesn't want to wait 200 years to have due process played out. So the policy of the administration is to dismantle the immigration court system, which, by the way, substantively speaking, the immigration courts nationwide are dead. Let me repeat that. It only exists in name only. Due process has been hijacked. Fair hearings have been hijacked. The introduction of military JAGs into the court system to preside as judges, I can tell you, having seen them directly, they know virtually zero about asylum law. Think about that. You have judges that are sitting on the bench that have no idea what asylum law is. They had a 2-week training period. They're not even close to being ready. That's exactly what they want. They want to create a rubber stamp production line because that's what these judges are going to do. They don't know what the nuances are for asylum. And so the administration is doing its best to bypass the court system, deport people through detain options. The detain options have expanded by draconian measures. I mean, now, if you were entering the, I have entered the United States without a visa, and you've been here for 30, 40 years, if you are arrested by ICE, the government is saying you don't have the right to a bond. You don't have a right to a bond. You're mandatorily detained, which is why most of the immigration attorneys have now gone to federal court and fortunately have succeeded with petitions for habeas corpus, where the federal courts are saying, wait a minute, due process demands that these people who are not in expedited removal have a right to request a bond. So, in sum, the administration has dismantled the immigration court system. They have attacked immigration judges, they have intimidated immigration judges, resulting in very little fair process. They try to tell me how to rule in cases. I'll tell you about that later.
All of which we will talk about, but let me just flip this thing on its ear just a little bit and play devil's advocate for a moment. Given the number of people who have slipped across our border without going through the normal process for immigration, the number of people who are trying to seek asylum, some of them legitimately, others not legitimately, and the backlog of cases that we have in immigration courts around the country. Is this the only way to fix it? I mean, how many judges would it require to reduce the amount of time people have to wait to get their chance at due process?
Well, the fix is not with immigration judges. We're basically at most a band-aid. The problem is Congress. Remember one thing, in 2024, there was bipartisan agreement for comprehensive immigration reform. One person stood up and says, I don't want you to have that agreement. That person was Donald J. Trump. He wanted to use the immigration problem as part of his election platform and to energize his base. We've had opportunities to fix the problem through Congress because ultimately that is where the fix lies, not with immigration judges. If we bring in another 130 judges, it'll slow back the backlog. It will certainly help, but it's not going to solve the problem.
Jamila.
I think that the immigration courts have become highly politicized. Currently, right, it's very politicized by the Trump administration, but even previously, the priorities, each administration comes in and sets their priorities. The Biden administration came in, set their priorities. The Trump administration comes in, sets their priorities. And that's where you have what creates these backlogs. The judges do not have this autonomy. They're not Article 3 judges that allow them to function independently as an independent judiciary. And that's part of the issue. It's also how the system has been created. Making immigration judges Article 3 judges would finally give them the independence the Constitution promises, and there'll be accountability in the law.
Explain Article 3 judges.
So Article 3 judges create an independent judiciary with judges who they have a lifetime tenure, salary protection, and they are not confined by political pressure, what we are seeing by the administration now. They're free to make their own decisions. And we have complex courts that are already created in similar contexts. You have bankruptcy courts that deal with bankruptcy issues, tax courts. Because immigration law is a complex area of the law, just bringing anyone that has a law degree to be a judge, as George mentioned, is not going to be a fix to the solution.
Julian, the Trump administration says that since it came to office and ramped up ICE efforts to find and deport people and also closed our borders, that the flood of people that were coming across the border during the Biden administration has essentially stopped. The number of people in July was down 97% compared to July of 2022. Since there are fewer people coming in, and that has reduced the rate of increase of new people having to deal with the immigration courts. Could we solve our immigration court backlog legitimately now?
Yeah, I think I agree with George. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, the immigration court is a band-aid, and what we would need is US Congress to actually create immigration reform, to have actual pathways for these people that are here to have long-term immigration status here in the country. And so, yes, fixing the border is one issue, but also actually creating ways for people to become residents here is another.
So let me flip that on its ear as well, Jamila. The Trump administration credits the decline in people coming across the border or the decline in the problem of immigration, not only to aggressive border enforcement, but also to rapid deportations. They say nearly 150,000 illegal immigrants have been arrested since January, with 50,000 arrests in the last 8 weeks alone. If these cases were to go to court, that would indicate that our backlog of cases would rapidly increase. Is that happening? Are these cases going to court, or are they simply being put on an airplane and flown out of the country?
So we do have cases that are going to court, but they're taking very long. Detained cases can t someone can be detained at Stewart Detention, where most of those that are detained here in Charlotte and surrounding areas go. They're detained there, can be detained there for a final hearing for months. What we do see happening is that many migrants are giving up. The conditions are so dire, the lack of food, lack of medical care, and just the lack of hope in these detention facilities that some of them are willing to sign what we call voluntary departures, that they're willing to leave the United States. The
And
government is also,
isn't that the plan?
that is the plan of this administration. And unfortunately, though, that is creating a further backlog because although people are not arriving via the border, we are detaining en masse individuals who were typically not put in proceedings. You have individuals who are moms of US citizen children, have no criminal records, which is the bulk of those being detained, who do have viable cases that they can fight before court. And those that seek to fight them are waiting months to fight it. So, but we, as to your point, yes, some people are willing to sign voluntary departures. But some are not. When you have an individual who's lived here 20, 25 years, has 4 US citizen children, they're going to wait it out as long as they can to fight their case. And we are seeing more of those type of people being detained who may have options before court that are willing to fight their case.
And these obstacles being put in front of people who would normally go to court and have their day in court and decide instead to just simply throw up their hands and say, "Okay, deport me." Is that legal with under our laws? And I have 20 seconds. Is that legal, what we're
No,
doing?
what we're doing and the lack of medical care and the lack of attention that we're providing to detainees is not legal.
When we come back, we'll take a little deep dive into how our immigration court system is supposed to work and how it is working and some of the things that are going on in those courts that we don't know about when we come back at Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, home ownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcharlotteregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about our backlog of cases in immigration courts around the country and what's happening in those courts with George Pappas. He's a former immigration court judge. Jamila Espinosa is with us. She's an immigration attorney with Espinosa Law. And Julian Berger is our race and equity reporter here at WFAE. George Pappas, since January, the Trump administration has been making changes, as we've alluded to these immigration courts. As he came back into office, he promised, or he referenced, the national growing backlog of cases to be around 3.7 million cases around the country, and he pledged to hire more judges. He has hired judges, but he's also fired judges, and through DOGE, as you referenced, other judges have resigned. And some of the people coming in, who are leaving, have extensive immigration experience. Why would you fire those judges if you're serious about fixing our immigration situation?
Well, Mike, the evidence shows the reason why he's firing judges like myself is because we were in private practice before we became judges. We represented immigrants. We provided pro bono services to the immigrant community, or we work with nonprofits. Over 85% of the 70 immigration judges who were fired had those backgrounds. So in fact, we were fired for what we were doing before we became judges. Mr. Trump and his administration, Pam Bondi, Attorney General, the Executive Office of Immigration Review, did not look at our performance, our efficiency. They gave us targets when we started. They said, close 700 cases in a year. That came from Trump one. I closed 2,000 cases, Mike, in 2 years, way above the targets. If they were looking at what we did on the bench, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. So the administration has implied that we have a liberal bias because we were in private practice. The judges that were not fired were former attorneys with the Department of Homeland Security. They were kept.
I want to bring up your record. During your time in immigration courts, records show that you ruled on 117 asylum cases. You granted asylum to 27 of those 117. You gave one other type of relief to one case, and you denied asylum claims to 89. That means that you denied 76.1% and granted only 24% of asylum cases. Your denial rate was, in fact, higher than the average for judges in Boston and even nationwide. With that record, why wouldn't they want to keep you?
Well, first of all, the numbers you quoted are so skewed in incorrect ways. Those numbers were only effective through November of 2024. I started being on the bench in August of 2023. So those numbers are way off. My average is probably closer to 64%. Okay. You're right, though. If you were to look at those numbers, why would you fire somebody that's in symmetry with what this government wants? Because they were not looking at the numbers. That's why. They disregarded our performances. We were considered probationary judges. We were the low-hanging fruit. We were the easiest to fire. And they waited for our two-year probationary period to end, and they fired us.
So some other judges resigned. Why?
The morale. After you saw a staggering amount of judges being fired, after you saw judges resigning, our assistant chief judges, except for the one in Charlotte, have all resigned. The morale plummeted. And so those people decided to have another career. The tone coming from the Executive Office of Immigration Review to the immigration judges was hostile. In fact, if you go and read the policy memos from the Executive Office and the way they talk to us in their memos, it became very hostile. Let me give you one example, a June 27th memo written to every single immigration judge in the United States said, quote, I'm paraphrasing. It said, some of you judges are biased. And if you're a biased judge, maybe you should get a different career, because if you don't, we're going to fire you. I just paraphrased a June 27th memo. It was called the impartiality memo. The insult, the insult to judges was hostile. So between the firings, the hostile tone, the morale plummeted. What we did not expect in Trump 2 was the staggering amount of firings. Like Ms. Espinosa has said, from administration to administration, you're going to see changes. You will see firings, but not to this extent. This is a massive assault on due process and the immigration courts.
Jamila, as we've all seen on television, ICE is often waiting just outside these immigration courtrooms where those people who are in the country are trying to follow the rules. They've been asked to come for their hearing. Yeah. They arrive for their hearing. They have their hearing. And ICE is lurking outside the rooms. They are nabbed by ICE. They're carted off. Are those actions by ICE in violation of our laws? Or has it traditionally been viewed as legitimate to arrest someone who has come to court as part of the legal process?
So what we see is some of it is illegal because judges are not dismissing the cases. So when an individual comes and is non-detained, they come to their hearings, and the judge continues their case, and they walk out, and ICE is detaining them to proceed with what we call expedited removals. That's not legal, right? They had the opportunity to see a judge. They would have been able to continue their case non-detained, but for ICE officials detaining them. And so what we're seeing is this enforcement, and what I believe largely is to deter individuals from coming to court, which is happening. Because if you don't come to court, the immigration judge will sign a deportation order against you. And that is the chilling effect that they've created. We have had ICE here at the Charlotte office. We've had them at the Charlotte court, both outside and right inside the lobby of the court. And that is the atmosphere it's creating. It's avoiding migrants that want to fight their case from coming.
So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, essentially. Julian, how many instances of this have occurred in our immigration court in Charlotte?
We're not sure exactly the exact number, but there is an immigration lawyer office in that same building as immigration court. And that specific lawyer has said he's seen this happen numerous times where ICE will be staked up in there waiting for somebody to come out.
And is it... Is it, Julian, to the best of your knowledge, deterring individuals from showing up for their day in court?
Yeah, it definitely is. Like Jamila says, it's like you're stuck in a rock or in a hard place. These immigrants that have hearings, if, you know, they're damned if they go to court because ICE may be there waiting for them. And they're damned if they don't go to court because then the judge will sign a detaining order. For them.
George, in a recent edition of American Public Radio's This American Life, you appeared on that program as a guest, and they say the immigration judges they spoke with, including you, were on edge about ICE being inside court buildings, just outside their doors in the hall. And they say it also manifested these changes with changes in the courtroom. Federal prosecutors who would normally appear on video were showing up in the courtroom to file motions to drop cases against these alleged illegal immigrants. And that evidently almost never happens for the federal government to drop a case. That sounds like good news for the defendants, because if your case is dropped, you can walk out the door and be free. You've won. But because you are free from prosecution, ICE evidently is now free to detain you once you leave the courtroom. How many times did that happen in your courtroom?
First, I wouldn't let ICE in my courtroom. They had to stay in the hallway. But I can tell you, in our courthouse, at least 5, 6, 7, 8 times over a 2-week period, they were waiting outside the courtroom, outside the courthouse, and they arrested people in the hallway, but not in the courtroom. We as judges drew a line at the Chelmsford Court. They were not to come into the courtroom and intimidate anybody. So that's number one. Number two, you're right. They came into the courthouse, and the assistant chief counsels for the first time would appear in these master hearings, basically stating, judge, we move to dismiss the case. And historically, that's good news for a judge because it means that the government is not prosecuting the immigrant and they have some degree of freedom. They're not given legal status on a dismissal, but it wasn't bad news in the past. But what happened here is that the firewall between the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security broke down. I was told by my assistant chief judge to grant those motions to dismiss. And I questioned my chief judge. I said, you want me to rubber stamp these decisions? Because if we do, they're going to be arrested. Well, he goes, unless the motion is defective, grant them. Those respondents, those immigrants, had 10 days to make a decision as to whether they wanted to fight that motion to dismiss. I also had to explain to them what it meant. But I never granted that motion. And I'll tell you why. Because these people had applications for asylum already filed. So I would ask the respondent immigrant, do you still want to pursue that relief? If they said yes, I would deny the motion. And up until July, that would allow them to walk out of the courthouse unmolested. That's changed after July. Now ICE is arresting everybody, even if they have asylum applications pending.
So let's back up. When a case is dropped by one side or the other, as I understand it, you're the legal expert here, not me. The other side, whichever side it is, has 10 days to decide whether they want to accept that decision of dropping the case. And you got a letter from the Executive Office for Immigration Review saying, quote, you don't need to give immigrants 10 days to respond. You may grant them motions that DHS is asking for on the spot. Some judges interpreted the word may, you may grant, as shall, you shall grant, which caused judges to question, evidently, their independence. That is clearly part of a strategy.
That's a May 30th memo, and it did not come to the judges. It went to the assistant chief judges. We never knew about that memo until I was out in the public. And you're right. That memo said you may grant the motion to dismiss on the spot in the individual master hearing, contrary to prior practice where the respondent had 10 days to decide whether they wanted to challenge that motion to dismiss. So our fair hearing, our ability to promote due process was being hijacked. We were told, forget about due process, just grant the motion and get them out of here. That's essentially what they were doing with that memo.
And what I'm hearing from you and what I learned yesterday for the first time in my life is that immigration court judges are not under the jurisdiction of the judicial branch of government. They are under the auspices of the executive branch, specifically the Department of Justice. Is why?
That's correct. As Ms. Espinosa said, we're not Article III courts. We are judges that are within the Executive Office of Immigration Review, which falls under the Department of Justice, which falls under the executive branch of the government. We are part of the executive. This is why Donald Trump and his administration and the Pam Bondi, the assistant, the attorney general, have been able to have such negative impacts on the immigration courts because we fall under their authority. We're not part of the judiciary.
So given that reality, and given the fact that the Supreme Court has essentially said a president can do anything they want to, and they can't be questioned because they're the president, and this whole unitary executive theory that the Project 2025 has pressed into service here, they're not doing anything wrong, are they? Telling you what you can and cannot do, how you can and cannot rule, that's their prerogative, isn't it?
No, it's not. There's something called the Fifth Amendment, due process, that's enshrined by the Constitution. They are attacking due process, which is a right that all people have in the United States. I didn't say citizens. I said people, human beings. What the administration is doing is attacking the fundamental constitutional right to a fair hearing by interfering with us.
Jamila, Stephen Miller, who is the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, has said, quote, the judicial process is for Americans. Immediate deportation is for illegal aliens. However, as the judge points out, the Constitution's Fifth Amendment says that, quote, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. No person. Given that, is there any basis in law, Jamila, for Stephen Miller's statement and the Trump administration's approach?
No, there's no basis in law. You know, Stephen Miller and the Trump administration want the nation really to believe, Americans to believe, that the Constitution does not apply to all. But that's not how it was written. The founders intended it to protect everyone that was present in the United States, right? And the reality is, the immigration court system is a test of our commitment to due process and what's happening and why this doesn't, for all the listeners, it's not just about immigration. This is about the rights of all individuals. And so when we just look at one system and we say the Constitution, it doesn't apply to these individuals, as we go further into this administration, that's what will continue to happen. Today is the migrants, and tomorrow could be another group of people.
So to be clear, no matter what side of the political aisle you are on, no matter whether you voted for Donald Trump or you did not vote for him, when ICE rounds up individuals and puts them on airplanes, sending them out of the country without that person having their having access to an attorney or having a hearing before a judge, is that against the law?
Yes.
Not necessarily. I'll let Ms. Espinosa continue. I'm sorry to interrupt. Yep. Go ahead, Ms. Espinosa.
If they're not subject to what we call expedited removal, so there are some individuals that are subject to expedited removal, and those are individuals who have been caught at a certain distance from the border, have lived in the United States less than 2 years, they may be detained and expeditedly removed from the United States. There's also certain contexts in which people may have arrived with certain types of visas in which they do not have the right to see an immigration judge. But for many of the individuals that we see are being detained right now, the Fifth Amendment still enshrined and still protects them. The 14th Amendment still protects them. And it is against the law for the bulk of the individuals we see are being detained. They are not following the Constitution.
Were those the exceptions you were going to refer to, Judge Pappas?
Yes. Those people, their constitutional rights are being violated. They are entitled to due process. They are not in the expedited removal zone, as Ms. Espinosa identified. They've been here more than 2 years. What this government has done is unilaterally redefine existing law to say that these people are subject to mandatory detention and do not have a right to ask for a bond, to apply for a bond. That's a violation of due process. And that's very critical. The government has unilaterally reinterpreted the law and is violating their due process rights.
There will be a change in administrations at some point in the future. We don't know when. We don't know what the new administration's position will be on all this. But if it's different from the Trump administration, does this put officials who are acting under direction from the Trump administration and evidently, allegedly breaking our laws and denying due process, does it put them at some sort of legal jeopardy down the road? I'm not sure.
I would think so. They don't have immunity. The Supreme Court gave the president immunity, but not these officials. So Steve Miller, Kristi Noem, Pam Bondi, they're all subject to these actions of pursuing unconstitutional violations of due process. They can be prosecuted later on under a different administration. Yes,
George
they
Pappas
can.
George Pappas is a former immigration court judge. He's here along with Jamila Espinosa with Espinosa Law. She's an immigration law attorney. And Julian Berger is our race and equity reporter for WFAE News. When we come back, the attacks on the rule of law.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the Gambrill Center at Queens, presenting author Robin Wall Kimmerer, known for braiding sweetgrass and the service berry, sharing perspectives on Indigenous knowledge and ecology on December 2nd at the Gambrill Center. More at gambrillcenter.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about our immigration courts, the backlog therein, and the approach by the Trump administration, which is substantially different toward people who are seeking asylum and who are looking for their day in court through due process and their guaranteed rights under the Fifth Amendment to our Constitution. George Pappas is with us. He's a former immigration court judge, and you have said the very institutions that glue our society together are melting in front of our eyes. Our institutions are under attack. I don't think that's arguable. I assume that you're including the immigration courts in that. But last summer, you were notified that your term on the court would not be extended. That's something you've called arbitrary and unfair and an attack on the rule of law, an attack on judges. And you were joined in that opinion just yesterday by another federal judge, a Republican appointee in Boston, Mark Wolf, who has also resigned, and he resigned so that he could comment on what is going on in our court system and around the country under the Trump administration. How concerned should we be? Because it starts in one place and ends in another. That's how authoritarians work.
I made those comments because they're true. No one is safe. This is not an immigration issue. This is not an immigration court issue. Everyone should be concerned. all of our institutions are being assaulted because many of them are promoting multiculturalism, diversity. Where is this coming from? Go to J.D. Vance. He is going out there in public telling Americans that the only real Americans are those that have lineage in the United States. If you don't have ancestral lineage in the United States, according to J.D. Vance, you are not a real American. So he's created a hierarchy.
Well,
of
what does that mean for Melania and his wife?
Hypocrisy. We don't want to talk about hypocrisy right now. I'm putting that to the side. But that hierarchy of who a real American is a blueprint for fascism, Mike. That's what's going on here. They are hitting all the institutions, not just immigration courts. They're going after the Department of Justice, firing. USAA, gone. Consumer Protection Board, gone. State Department firings, gone. Universities are under attack.
Inspectors general within the government who are the watchdogs of wrongdoing, gone.
The dismantling of the administrative state is Project 2025. This is the blueprint. And all Americans should be concerned that the attack on immigration judges, the attack on due process, is a threat to every U.S. citizen.
Now, there are those who are going to say, and you've admitted this, that you were fired by the Trump administration because you were too liberal in their view. And so you have an axe to grind. How can we take what you're saying at face value if you have an axe to grind?
If I have an axe to grind because my violations of due process are in evidence, we're in trouble. I'm speaking out as a former judge because due process and fair hearings has been interfered with by this administration. When I'm being told by my assistant chief judge to rule in a certain way, that's an interference with fair hearings and due process. That should concern every American.
So we had this instance of yesterday of Mark Wolf, a judge, a federal judge appointed by a That's Republican. Right. And I can't remember. I think it was Ronald Reagan who reported him, who appointed him to the bench, resigning so that he could speak out against what he sees going on. You are speaking out because you're no longer on the bench. Can you be on the bench and speak out? And if so, if not, rather, why aren't more people who have dedicated their lives to the rule of law speaking out?
Fear and immigration judges have
fear
a gag
of,
order.
Fear of what?
They're fearing being fired. They're fearing of being doxxed. Their fear of attacks. Judges, their threats against judicial lives. Their safety is under attack.
But some of these judges have lifetime appointments.
That doesn't mean that some of those judges didn't have family members murdered because of their outspokenness or of their position. They're under threat. The rhetoric coming from the White House is threatening judicial safety. Safety, not just opinion.
There were those who feared that the month-long government shutdown, Julian, might worsen the backlog of cases here and elsewhere. But the government kept those courts open. So was there any impact at all? Did they experience any negative impact from the government shutdown?
No, not at all. Immigration courts across the country are still open as normal, but this isn't typical. Typically, you would see that most hearings would be postponed, but now with the government shutdown, all cases have been going through the courts as normal.
And in spite of the firings of judges, the Department of Justice evidently swore in 36 immigration countries across the country in October. How many of those judges are in Charlotte, those new judges? Do we know?
Yeah, so we got one temporary judge here at Charlotte's Immigration Court. And here's the thing that George was saying as well. He has no experience in immigration law. Most recently, he's worked in finance, banking here in the city. And he previously was a trial lawyer, at Fort Campbell in Kentucky. So he has experience as a lawyer before, but not in immigration law.
So Jamila, as we pointed out, a lot of these judges that are being hired to replace judges who have extensive experience in immigration law have no background and little knowledge of immigration law. Clearly there's a reason for that change, and that is what?
So
it's called, go ahead.
Partly what we're seeing is you have these temporary judges, and if I'm not mistaken, this new judge will be a temporary judge because he still is considered an officer of the armed forces. And so that is going to have a grave effect because he's not going to understand the nuances, the complexities. Immigration law is not an area of law that you can just pick up. A 2-week course that they are being trained on is not going to give them the nuances and the ability to really make effective decisions. What we're seeing is that they intend to use JAG officers as immigration judges on a temporary basis, which will pose a whole host of other issues, as typically military officers cannot serve in civilian courts.
So you've got that going on. You've got those judges and other you got those judges and other judges who have taken an oath to the Constitution, breaking constitutional law. Is that what's happening here, Judge?
They're also taking an oath to obey the orders of their commander in chief and superior officers.
As long as they're not illegal orders.
Ah, somebody's got to make that decision. They are in the position where they've taken an oath to obey the commands of their commander-in-chief, yet they're on the bench and they have to protect due process. If the commander-in-chief says, I want you to vote or decide a case in a certain way, what is that neutral judge supposedly going to do? Obey the commander-in-chief or protect due process? It's an inherent tension. They shouldn't be in that position to begin with.
You're painting a very bleak picture here, you and Judge Wolf and others who have pointed out the problems that the Trump administration has set up with their agenda. And that includes Ty Cobb, who was a former attorney for Donald Trump in the first administration, who says exactly what you've been saying this morning, that this is an attack on the rule of law. What do people in the business of law, attorneys, judges, what do citizens do in the face of all of this?
I want to tell attorneys to object to these individual hearings or these master hearings as being prejudicial. We have evidence that EOIR is interfering with judicial neutrality. We have evidence that the temporary judges are in a conflict inherently due to their oath to obey their superior commanders. Now these hearings are inherently prejudicial. If an attorney does not object to those hearings on the record, they will forfeit their right to appeal in federal court. Any attorney who does not object to the prejudicial nature of these hearings, in my opinion, is committing malpractice. My warning.
So judges may be between a rock and a hard place because their employment is at risk, as is their personal and safety and that of their families. But what about these attorneys who are pleading for the people who are the defendants in these cases, and they're seeing the rule of law being obstructed or obliterated? Why would they not speak out?
Why would they not speak out? They may fear that there may be an adverse decision against their client, but to allow a prejudicial hearing to proceed is irresponsible, unprofessional, especially when the evidence has now been placed in front of them that these are no longer fair hearings. They will advance the cause of their client, the respondent, by making this objection. They will hurt their client if they don't, because they will lose an option to appeal a bad decision in federal court. That's why attorneys need to wake up and fight hard in the courtroom and not allow a prejudicial context to go unanswered and unobjected to.
Jamila, you are in that courtroom. You are an immigration attorney. Talk to me about your approach. How are you reacting to all of this? Have you witnessed this or experienced it personally with one of your clients in a courtroom?
So among the hardships that my clients are experiencing is the continued backlog. I have fortunately here in Charlotte, the new model is that we see virtual judges. Many of them were former military judges as the Richmond Adjudication Center. And I will say that the judges that I consistently appear before, they do consider all of the facts in the case and they do consider the evidence, but the issues that at the heart of what's affecting my clients is the inability to present their case. When we have to present our case in 30 minutes and then have it continued for another 8 months, where the judge takes direct testimony, and then 8 months from now, we have to take cross-examination and other witnesses, my client's not gonna have a fair chance before that judge. How is he gonna recall what happened? And those are the issues that are happening, not necessarily that the judges are not considering the law, but given the priorities of the administration and this detained docket's taking precedent, they're not getting a fair chance. And at the heart of it, it's not just a bureaucratic issue, it's a justice issue. When a judge's independence is compromised, so is the rule of law. And that's why immigration judges have to be independent judges.
Judge Pappas.
Mike, you just heard Attorney Espinoza say that judges are telling attorneys, you've got 30 minutes to present your direct examination. That is a direct assault on due process. I should never be told as an attorney, you've got 30 minutes to present your case, a case that may determine the fate of that person's existence in the United States, their family, their fear of persecution. We're being told, I'm sorry, the EOIR is putting pressure on these judges to just production line, speed up the cases, and in turn, they're telling attorneys, you got 30 minutes to present your case. That's outrageous. It's a violation of due process. I would object if I was told, I've got 30 minutes. Ms. Espinoza, I would fight back and tell, judge, you can't tell me 30 minutes. If you do, I object. Mike, that's my opinion.
And we do that on the record. That's not to say that we don't, and we don't, and we, and I request that the judge continue the case outright. But as George has mentioned, the judges have these directives. So although I object, and in a case that I had this week, not only did I object, but the prosecutor actually objected and said, I don't have sufficient time before your next case, Your Honor. And the judge still required us to continue and then continued the case for several months after so taking 30 minutes. Testimony.
Donald Trump has seriously curtailed illegal border crossings. There's no question about that. He has embarked on deportations, even if their legality is questionable. He's promised during the campaign, however, to target violent criminals who came here illegally, and he promised to stop the migrant crime epidemic. Are the people that you are witnessing, Jamila, going through these courts or not even making it to court, being deported in the hallways by ICE, are they violent criminals? Is there a migrant crime epidemic to quell?
No, there isn't. My clients, the bulk of my clients have no criminal history. And if I said they had criminal history, it would be a traffic citation or driving without a license because they have to work, they've been driving, they don't have a license. But the bulk of my clients have absolutely no criminal history, no speeding tickets, nothing. And those are the individuals that ICE is currently detaining. Those are the individuals that we are housing at a very high cost to the taxpayer dollars because they do, the bulk of them do have fights in which they're cases in which they're able to fight. You have individuals who've been paying taxes, they have U.S. citizen family members, and they have methods in which that sometimes that they can actually obtain their residency. We have cases in which individuals are currently detained that are eligible for their green cards, and the government would rather have them detained at taxpayer expense, knowing that they likely will still receive their green card because they're eligible, just to be able to count them as a detained individual and up their quota of individuals ICE has detained.
Julian.
Yeah, and I think that's a big point that Jamila is making, is that we have such a long wait time. So somebody goes to the court and then they have to wait 8 months, a year, 2 years. There's this big fear factor in immigrants of, oh no, what if ICE comes and detains me and deports me before my next court hearing? That's a lot of what I'm hearing from immigrants here in the city.
And Julian, CBS News reports that nationwide, the number of detainees in U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement custody increased to 66,000 detainees facing deportation. Do we know how many of those detainees are from this region?
Yeah, so the data that I do know about the number of people ICE has picked up, in the first 5 months of Trump's term, ICE picked up 1,600 people here in the state, and that's more than double the same period last year. And that's really all the data that I've been able to track down about arrests and detainees and so forth.
And theoretically speaking, correct me if I'm wrong, you're the illegal eagles here, Jamila and Judge Pappas, all of these 66,000 people should be given their day in court. They should be given due process. Is that correct?
Yes, they should be given their due process. They're not in expedited removal. They have a right to their day in court. They have a right to ask for a bond and apply for a bond. That's a fundamental right that they have. Statistically, about 93% of all of those 66,000 detained are non-criminal offenders. These are the people that are paying taxes. Undocumented immigrants subsidize Social Security to the tune of $26 billion. These people produce, they run businesses, they have families. They are not the worst of the worst that the administration campaigned on.
And I want to underline something you just said. These people who have jobs, whether they're legally here or not, are paying into Social Security, but they are not taking out of Social Security because they cannot. We have
Correct.
To stop there. George Pappas is a former immigration court judge. Jamila Espinosa is an immigration attorney with Espinosa Law. And Julian Berger, our race and equity reporter for WFAE News. I guess the word to the wise today is be vigilant because it's happening. Thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.